a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
So here's Jose Abreu, first and third, one out. And Abreu lines one into right center field. That is going to be down for a base hit. The Astros on the board. An RBI for Abreu. It's now a 3-1 game. Jose Abreu, in his first game with the Astros since April, delivers with an RBI base hit.
Welcome back, Jose Abreu.
He's back
on the team and maybe other things. But Jose Abreu's back on the roster. Let's talk about the good things first. Paul, it's nice to see you. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Hope everyone enjoyed their three-day weekend as much as you can.
But more than anything, I hope that people respected the troops that gave their lives for our country.
Absolutely. I hope you did that.
That's the real meaning.
How did you do that?
Of the weekend. I drank a lot of alcohol.
Same.
Yeah.
I hung out with my cat, my three-year-old, my wife.
Nice.
I drank a lot of alcohol.
There you go.
So it was a good weekend. And Jose Abreu, the Astros 2-2 since we left the show on Friday. But Jose Abreu's back. And that's absolutely the biggest story of the Houston Astros right now, that after all the speculation of what it was going to be and what it was going to look like, Dana Brown actually told us the exact truth, that he was going to play two games in Sugar Land. He did that. He flew to Seattle. He's with the team. Started the game. That's baseball. The baseball is going to find you. It doesn't matter what the Astros have done with Jose Abreu. When they would move him down to the lineup before he went to Florida, like there would be runners in scoring position when he came to the plate. And then yesterday, he's back in the lineup, and he's back in the field, and what happens? A screamer right at him, and it goes right by him.
And then another hit right by him that he was unable to get. It would have been a more difficult play for him to make, but I thought it was noteworthy that the Space City Home Network broadcast did not show the replay of Abreu's defense there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll never know what happened that fateful night in Seattle. At least for that specific play. But
yeah.
It starts off with his defense looking like not a positive. His first at-bat ends, Joe, with, I felt, some bad luck. That was a hell of a pitch that Miller put low and away from him. He got caught looking. But as you heard coming in a clutch situation, Jose Abreu, like most of the bottom of the order for the Houston Astros, did at least what they were asked to do. He gets that RBI single, and unfortunately, they weren't able to do any more damage than in that inning when they just scored two runs.
Yeah, and look, and yesterday's a frustrating game, and there's a lot to dive in throughout the weekend, which we'll get to throughout the show. Yesterday is really just an example of, I think, a prime example of what's been wrong with this team. You're 1-5, gets one hit in yesterday's game. Fromber has the rocky start, but he figures it out. He didn't unravel. He didn't have a mental breakdown. Positives.
It felt like he could have had a mental breakdown and did not, but I do think it's worth noting that the first inning and the second inning, where he allowed six hits each, and the sixth inning, where he had two wild pitches, were the kind of things that you do not want to see out of Framber Valdez, because you know what it can lead to after that. To his credit, it was a quality start, but it wasn't that quality of a quality start.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
No, it absolutely makes sense.
Three runs in the first, it could have been multiple in the second. They were able to get out of the second. They were able to get out of a jam in the sixth. The bats, 2-5, 0-14.
How do you feel that?
That's why you lost.
Now that Jose Abreu is back on the roster, and we'll see what happens next. We don't know what this platoon is going to really look like with the Astros. We've gotten back and forth responses about timeshare, John Singleton being the primary guy. At least he was for now, according to Dana Brown. But he did say it was Joe Espada's decision. How do you feel like up into this process, you feel about the Jose Abreu situation, how the Astros have handled
it? Well, I think now, I mean, we're going to find out how well they can take the criticism and take the extra skepticism and scrutiny that's going to come with it. Because, you know, we've heard at times competing takes from Dana Brown, from Joe Espada, on what they would like to see out of Abreu and how they plan to handle Abreu when he's back, and the players that have been getting playing time around him, the guy they sent down, and Joey Loperfido. And I'm very curious to see, after one day where it was clear everyone watching the game last night was focusing on one thing and one thing only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fromber's struggles take a backseat. The offense not doing anything through five takes a backseat, because all everyone was focused on was Abreu's defense and him at the plate. And it wasn't a bad game, but if the struggles happen again, what happens and how well are the Astros going to be able to withstand the criticism?
Yeah.
And on top of that, how are they going to keep the clubhouse from getting tired of guys who are not worthy of playing time getting playing time? Because if Abreu struggles again, I don't know, even if I like Abreu the most, even if he's my bestie in the clubhouse, I don't know how I can sign off on him playing.
Yeah, it's easier to be Alex Bregman and these guys when he's sent down to Florida and talk about how great of a teammate he is. It's when you feel like your season's turning around. You had won a good amount of baseball games while he was gone. It was your best baseball you've played this season while he was in Florida.
Yeah.
And then if things start to go poorly again, and while a Christian Javier injury that's now happening, Jose Urquidy's not coming back, it seems like. We'll wait to hear answers on both of their MRIs today, what their right forearm discomforts lead to. But I think it's a good point of just, what does Abreu do next? And what is the fallout if he's not good? So, like, up to this point, I'm frustrated with the Jose Abreu situation, because, you know, Joe Spada and Dana Brown were not there. All they were going on was the word of Jeff Bagwell. And the quick turnaround to these, when you go back to the timeline that we've talked about, where it's Joe Espada, like last Thursday, or two Thursdays ago, saying, we don't know, we're waiting to see. Then on that following Sunday, Dana Brown was saying, nope, he's coming back next Friday. And then it was, yeah, is he your everyday first baseman? Well, Dana Brown says, I like John Singleton at first base. He's our first baseman, but it's Joe Espada's decision. And they just keep going and going and going. The timeline sped up so fast. It went from nothing to he's back on the team so quickly. It really didn't make logical sense. So my question is now is, what happens next? If he's going 1-for-4 every night with 3 strikeouts, is that good enough for Jose Abreu? What are the expectations for Jose Abreu? My expectations is, I'll take last night. It's I would want more than that. But if, as long as he's not going 0-for-5 every single night, at least he's not the worst guy on the team at the moment. But I have zero expectations for Jose Abreu. Last night was fun. It was nice to see him get the RBI single. It would have been nice for the Astros to win that game and get some help from other guys who are supposed to be actually good on this team. But like, the question is, what happens next?
Yeah, he made contact with the baseball in every single at-bat. He had a foul off in the first at-bat, the third at-bat, where he had that soft liner to second base. You thought, coming off the bat, if it had a little more juice, okay, maybe that would have been another single for Abreu. But supposedly, he has shortened his swing, mm-hmm, and he wasn't able to see that he had to shorten his swing. He said that a smorgasbord of Astros hitting coaches made him aware of that. And now from night to night, they're going to have to figure out a way to get him in the lineup, but get some of the same bats that were getting playing time into the lineup. And it's not going to be easy. And I think what's unfortunate about this is that I think Joe Espada is going to get blamed for a lot of this. And it's interesting, you go back to some of his comments specifically about Joey Loperfido getting sent down. And Espada, in that moment, you could tell, said, like, he's playing too well to get sent down.
Mm-hmm.
It was not easy, because I think he's done enough to stay at the major league level. So, you know, he doesn't really have control over this roster. And theoretically, he has control over this lineup. But you're going to have to do a lot of juggling to make his return work in a way that doesn't stop the momentum that you've had in the time he's been gone, where before last night's game, you were 15-10.
Junior Bronco says here on the Twitch, I would bet Abreu starts the next 9 games regardless of performance. Semantics, I'll point out that he'll probably get an off day, but it'll be a scheduled off day, if anything. I tend to agree. He's going to play a lot, and he probably should. Joe Espada said that himself, too. He said, we have to see the adjustments, he has to be on the field. So Jose Abreu probably should play the next 8 of 9 games. He should be in there consistently, because you have to see if these adjustments that he was not aware he needed to make but now has supposedly made in just less than 30 days, if they're going to mean anything for him this season.
But after a night like John Singleton had last night, where Singleton also had a key hit in that inning, and on top of that, I mean, any other ballpark, it's really hard to hit home runs in Seattle. There's the marine layer, all that stuff. I mean, he crushed that bomb in the sixth inning to right center field. I mean, it looked like it was gone.
Yeah.
Singleton did the bat flip afterwards. Singleton has said that he's got to play regularly. And okay, this is a guy that has been a career minor leaguer, essentially, that's been trying to fight and claw to keep himself in the majors for a while. But I also can see how he's just better as a guy who's going to play every day than as a guy who is coming off of the bench. I think he's 1-for-25 in pinch hit situations
That's
over the course
good,
of his
Paul.
Career.
That's not good.
Definitely not. So last night, you had Fromber on the hill, so you could put Yordan in left field, and you could put Singleton at DH, and you could have Abreu out there at first. That opportunity does not come very often. There's going to be a lot of games where Singleton's sitting on the bench. And it's not like Singleton's blowing the cover off the ball or anything like that. I mean, he's hitting 220-something. But if he plays less, he's going to hit worse. And again, it always goes back to Jose Abreu. And if Jose Abreu, a 37-year-old ex-MVP, got to a point this year where he was saying, there was a point, and I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart, I couldn't even know how to hit, how to field, then, I mean, it is totally possible that this happens again. And I feel bad for him having gone through that. Abreu does not seem like a douche, you know? This would be a totally different story if we were talking about another player who had an ego or something like that.
Yes.
He seems to be well-liked in the clubhouse. It is not his fault that the Astros gave him that contract. They gave him that contract, and it is looking bad. But if he can get to a point like that, after a month of baseball when he has been as good as he has been, there is certainly the possibility that this happens again. And when it happens again, what the hell is Joe Espada supposed to do?
It is the complicated question, because you could, you know, just say, forget Chaz McCormick. We're just going to play Yordan in left and and hope he doesn't run into a wall and doesn't get hurt out there. And Yordan's your left fielder, and Chaz is a pinch hit guy because you're not taking Jake Myers out of the lineup, and Singleton's your DH. You could go that path. You can go where, to what you're saying, where Singleton just doesn't really play a lot. And he's been good enough to where I think that would be a mistake. We have a question here on the text line of Twitch. Do they even score any runs if Singleton, the Mariners, if Singleton's at first base? I don't know. I mean, to me, that's not a good enough reason to why they lost yesterday's game. It's the top of your order that's really
the
problem.
Yeah, they're 14. Jeremy Peña was 0-for-4 with 4 Ks.
Yeah,
he was
struggling yesterday. But it's like, it's not Abreu in the lineup that is the reason why you lost. But to what you were originally saying is, that's going to be the focal point of conversation for this show and every fan going forward and the organization.
No one wants him back except for probably Jeff Bagwell and Jim Crane.
Yep. Anyone else? Anyone else want him back? His parents?
Probably some players in the clubhouse like him, but they want that Jose Abreu
to
be back.
They want to win.
They don't want Jose Abreu, the bad baseball player, back. They want Jose Abreu, the good baseball player, back. And again, it remains to be seen. Last night was a promising sign at the plate. The defense is still not great.
Yeah, not great. All right, we'll continue this conversation, plus our observations from the other games this weekend that the Astros had. 2-2 since we were last on the air on Friday. It's Glant and George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
All right, a bunch of stuff to get into here about Jose Abreu. A couple of questions on the text line, the Twitch. We'll start right here with Junior Bronco. Am I the only one that thinks it's kind of selfish of Abreu to put salvaging his reputation over what's best for the team? It's not like he's paid based on playing time.
I don't know if this is salvaging his reputation. I think that part of this is salvaging Jeff Bagwell and Jim Crane's reputation with their little brief stint as general manager of the team, a team which they might still be pulling all the strings for. But I also think that they're of the belief that if they're going to win this year, he has to be good, and that John Singleton isn't capable over 105 games of being an everyday player. And I think that's a fair thing to believe. It is. I mean, it is a guy who used to be an MVP, and it is a guy that, at the end of last year, played well. He was not a liability for you in the playoffs, despite all of his struggles during the regular season. But there's a certain point where, as they bring up all the time, the back of the baseball card can't guarantee you a daily spot. So really the hope is that the shortened swing is going to make things better. I saw a couple of people out there that seem to be of the belief that people are rooting against Jose Abreu. And I don't think that is the case at all. I think I just saw someone on the Twitch bring up that, hey, it's not like I'm rooting against Abreu. I don't think anyone's rooting against Abreu. I think it was Will Kunkel who put out a tweet saying, like, we should all be rooting for Abreu. I think we're all rooting for Abreu. I just think that nobody believes he's going to be able to, over the remaining 105 games or whatever the hell is left, to be a plus player. And if that's the case, then why is he playing?
I do think there are a weird group of Astros fans that if you don't do what they want you to fail. That, like, just because, even though Jose Abreu is on the team and hit an RBI single last night, because it's not what they would do, that they hate it. It's a small population of people on calling into post game shows and tweeting about these things, but they exist. In general, I think you're right. Like, everyone wants Jose Abreu to succeed. Everyone wants Jose Abreu to be what he was the last month of the season. If he's that, you're definitely going to win the division. I hope.
There it is again.
I was like, I had to bring it back for you guys.
There we go.
I got to bring it back at some point. Find a way to work it in.
Good job.
We had a three-day weekend, and for those who missed it, on Friday, Joe delivered a very bold proclamation and followed it up with, I hope. And Sean and I bullied him the rest of the
time. I think it was, the Texans' defense will be improved. I hope.
Yep. And so now it's going to be a new part of the show. Things I'm going to say, and then things I hope as well. Not all the time. It's not going to be an everyday thing. It's going to sprinkle.
I think it's the things where you are trying to project strength.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
let's sprinkle it in. The Astros will figure this out. I hope.
From the 346, I kind of expect the Brady to be the kryptonite for this potent offense. No, I don't agree with that, I'll be honest. I don't think Jose Abreu is going to be the reason why this team fails again.
No, I keep on going back to the real issue that was last year's playoffs. The pitchers were garbage. Mm-hmm. Fromber sucked. Christian Javier sucked. And we touched on this briefly in the opening segment, Joe. But, I mean, it's pretty concerning seeing that Christian Javier, who dealt with neck discomfort and missed 18 games, is all of a sudden going on the 15-day IL.
He's not hurt, though.
With his velocity down. And you're right, Joe. They did just say that he's not hurt.
Just mechanics.
I think this is going to be a prolonged stint. I mean, well, if neck discomfort's keeping you out 15, what is right forearm discomfort? And okay, maybe with Fromber, who had the right forearm discomfort, sidelining not too long ago. Okay, maybe all circumstances are different. But that does not make me feel good, given that we have seen the velocity decrease pretty visibly.
Yeah,
everyone's kind of on top of that right now.
The Urquidy one is probably the one I guess I'm more concerned.
Yes, because when
they gave him the ball back and he went to do a warm-up pitch and he just like lobbed it in there, I was like, that's not good.
And on top of that,
just because we visually saw it, it looks worse.
And the injury that happened in spring training, or the tweak, I guess is what they want to call it. I mean, that was 2+ months ago. Yeah. So, I mean, 2+ months later, he re-aggravates it. Is he going to re-aggravate it again? Yeah. I mean, how long do you keep him out if it's a second re-aggravation, especially considering you do not want to force this guy into a Tommy John surgery?
Well, the odds would say is that one of the two is going to be announced to be having Tommy John today. So that's my guess. From the 281 here, what is so good about Singleton? He sucks too. Just trade that combo. You can't trade him. And put Diaz or the Italian rookie at first. Yeah, I'd love for Lopofito just to be the everyday first baseman, but he's not. He didn't play first baseman a single game. They chose Mauricio Dubon to play first base.
He's barely played it in the minors. And I mean, the fact that even after a game like Jose Abreu had, I think the notes from Chandler Rome were like, hey, look, I know a lot of people want him to get out there. This isn't his words. I'm paraphrasing here. It's more he is nowhere close to being ready to play defense on an everyday basis at first base. But unfortunately, I mean, he was hitting well. Maybe he was striking out a lot, but you know, that's the other thing, too, with Chaz McCormick back on the roster, and McCormick hasn't played the last two games, so it feels like we might be going back to early 2023, Dusty Baker not putting McCormick in every single game, and Lo Perfido's not out there. And, I mean, they brought up Lo Perfido, and Lo Perfido played well. And they said they brought up Lo Perfido to have him play, probably because he was playing well.
And I think that's why he's back down, is because he's not going to play. Like we just went through the whole Singleton Abreu conversation, and you have Jordan and Chaz and all these guys, and Jake Myers has in a very positive way, because he was another bright spot again this weekend. Yeah, Myers, the home run, that catch last night.
That catch last night was incredible.
Even the heads up play to toss it to Tucker after, like,
that was cool.
Great move.
I mean, you don't see that very often.
No.
It was just a smart heads-up play. I don't think I would have. If I made a sick catch, I probably would be reveling in it for a little bit.
I'd be laying on the ground selling it.
Like, yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. But, of course, there were guys on base, and, I mean, he had to get it back in.
That might have been my favorite play from this weekend in Astros baseball. Just specifically the flip, too. Now, the catch, awesome. Love it. But the flip, too, it's like, oh, God. You're seeing the whole matrix there.
Yeah, so he's made it impossible to take him out of the lineup. And that's what complicates this conversation, is that it can't be early 2023. Because early 2023, we all told Dusty Baker he was wrong, that Chaz McCormick should be in the outfield every day. They better never take Jake Myers out at this point. He is your everyday center fielder unless he gets hurt or starts slowing down. But you are not taking that guy out of your lineup unless he needs an off day.
Unless he starts slowing down, as you said. And again, remember, this is possible for all these guys. They can all...
For sure.
They can all slow down. I mean, right now, one of the guys I'm really looking at in the lineup, I'm like, Yiner Diaz. And, I mean, that was a guy that we all thought, ooh, all-star potential if he plays every single day. And here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Doesn't mean that his season is over. We do have to take a look at the big picture sometimes with all this stuff. But, I mean, that's another issue. The problem is your outfield has the most depth. And
easily.
And you can't play outfielders at other positions. This isn't a video game where they wouldn't F up that badly, I guess. In a video game, in real life, they're probably going to screw up.
And even like Lo Perfido, he can play, I think, second base. Well, there's no room there.
Yeah, that's the one infield spot that's like the same. Like,
and even then, it's like you have Pena and Bregman. And we got text here from the 409. Honestly, Lo Perfido looked great in the outfield. At this point, I'd be okay trading Chaz. Yeah, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think Chaz will get traded by the deadline.
I do think there is a little bit of, like, he's not wasted at first base. Lo Perfido wouldn't be wasted at first base, but he does add an element with his speed that, like, would play better in the outfield than he would be digging out throws at first base.
I mean, his first game.
That play was incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Joey the Rope.
Exactly.
Gun that guy down at second. Oh!
We didn't stick with that nickname.
Mario Antonio Lo Perfido.
We did like two segments on what are we calling Joey Lo Perfido.
Well, because we probably started focusing on, even though the Astros were playing better, the bat. Because this year we were focusing a lot more on the bat. And to go back to sort of what we were talking about earlier, we all want to see Abreu succeed, but the problem is we're skeptical about it. It would be nice to be sunshine and rainbows with the Astros. It would be nice to have a summer of putting your feet back up and being like, you get to play the A's and the Angels 19 times a year, but sadly now it's a 13-time thing, and you should have swapped the A's over the weekend.
Yeah, well, and also, didn't you lose the series to the Angels?
You lost the series to the Angels.
So it's like, and you lost to them last year. I wish they would just smash these teams on a more consistent basis. All right, what else did we miss from this weekend? We'll kind of touch on the other Astros games. A lot of stuff going on. We got lost Bill Walton this weekend, the NBA Finals. Half of that is set. Bunch of stuff to get into. And in case you missed it next. Oh, and Tony Busby's back in the NFL world. He's back. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You are back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Before we get to In Case You Missed It, let's go to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Thomas, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, guys? Love the show. I was saying that why don't we just trade Chaz, stick Lucrafito out there in left field, let him use his talent, and then stick that big, giant, bad man out there at first base. It can't be that hard.
Thank you, Thomas, for the call. Coincidentally, the Twitch is also suggesting putting Yiner Diaz at first base. At least Yiner Diaz has played one game at first base. Thomas, I wish you could be right.
Caratini isn't that bad of a backup either, and I mean, he's been very good in pinch hit situations as well. Yeah, I would like to see that from time to time, at the very least. But
it's over. Alvarez is never playing first base for the Houston Astros.
He must be very untrustworthy in that spot.
We've been talking about it for 4 years, it feels like. And there's been spring training workouts and pregame workouts, and every single time, like, Tags or someone or Mark Berman be like, Yordan Alvarez getting grounders at first. Well, he never plays first. Like, I wish, but it's not happening.
And look, now, this hasn't worked for Jose Abreu doing Pilates, but Yordan Alvarez, if he did Pilates or something like that, got a little more stretchy, you know, if he was able to do splits and such.
Don't want that either.
I feel like he's going to get hurt as soon as he tries to
don't,
do it.
Don't want it.
That's limber enough to, like, put his glove at his ankle and catch a ball.
Yeah. just imagining him stretch to scoop. I'm like, oh, there's his hamstring.
Think about the Abreu play last night. Like, you really want to see Yordan Alvarez making that play?
Not really.
I mean, he's bigger, so the ball might just hit him.
Just bounce off him.
Yeah, just hit
it. There is only one player on this team that we are nervous about getting hurt while fielding. It is Yordan.
Yeah.
Consistently, yes.
King of
Jake
Twitch.
Myers still has a little bit of that, but that's...
That's because Jake Myers runs into walls cartoonishly.
Yeah, he's but just one guy abandoned. Where yeah. simple tat, like him walking to the stadium. I'm like, is Yordan going to get hurt?
King of Twitch says first base is not a position where you need an advanced degree. My God, it's the easiest position to play. Well, King, like, while I want to agree with you as well, the Astros don't. The Astros don't agree. They've been telling us that Yordan Alvarez, Joey Lopofito, Yiner Diaz, all these guys are going to get reps at first base, and none of them ever do.
Yeah.
The only one to be told we're getting reps at first base and then see him play first base more than, like, three times is Mauricio Dubon. So, like,
and that is, like, four times.
Yeah.
it's minimum. He hasn't done it a ton.
I can count that high. All right, let's get to In Case You Missed It.
Did you catch everything this weekend in the world of sports and beyond? Neither did we.
I do not recall that, okay?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Sorry, I have no recommendation of that.
No idea.
Absolutely not.
And now, In Case You Missed It, with Gallant and George.
The comeback tour begins, not just with the Houston Astros, in the big leagues, but also in the minor leagues. Astros prospect Blair Henley was named Pacific Coast League Pitcher of the Week. He carried a no-hitter into the seventh inning Sunday for AAA Sugarland, ending his start with five strikeouts and 6 one-hit innings.
Sidebar. Joe, put earmuffs.
Sean, do we think he was being serious there or sarcastic?
I think he's being serious, but he has ulterior motives. He's trying to... He's trying to get off Blair Henley Hater Island over there. Because now, Player of the Week, Blair Henley.
Yeah. One time, Player of the Week.
Blair Henley shut his haters up.
Yep.
Yeah, you must feel foolish right now. That would be the headline online. Blair Henley making haters, and by haters, there's only one, Joe George, eat crow.
Here's the thing.
Proven
at this point, I'm expecting him to pitch for the Astros in the next 10 days. Okay? That's how I feel about Blair Henley.
Well, hopefully
they might need it.
Hey,
if they give him a heads up, he's got him better.
Give him a heads up.
Well, they didn't give him a heads up last time, right?
I mean,
I think it was like day. I think it was day of.
It was
someone
day
got
of.
Hurt. I can't even remember at this point who got hurt. Was it JV? No.
Was it Javier?
I think it was Javier. I think it was Javier.
I know it was against the Rangers. I know they won that game.
Yeah.
How Joe talks about the Blair Henley era of the Houston Astros, all one out of it. you would think that it was the worst thing to ever happen to this team, where a team that's, by the way, trotting out Alex Bregman and Jose Abreu.
Pop
every
out
night.
City, Alex yeah. Bregman.
Batting them fourth.
In case you missed it, he had one last night.
Yeah, he had another one. The pop out tracker. We need someone to do that. Paul sent us this.
There's a guy that
Abreu sucks tracker.
He has an account. It's called Should He Used Qualls. It's about Astros reliever Chad Qualls. He changes the name every now and then, but he will track struggling Astros with alarming precision.
Yeah, it's incredible. I was just looking through his Twitter account. I was like, this guy might be a must follow.
He's one of my favorite Astro original accounts because I always thought it was funny when Chad Qualls came into a game. Chad Qualls was my original Rafael Montero show.
All right, so over the weekend, we found out that the Jacksonville Jaguars and former Jags kicker Brandon McManus are being sued by two women for sexual harassment, sexual assault on a flight to London. And representing the two women in this case, Tony Busby. He is just making a living. He represented all the women in the Sean Watson case, or most of the women. He represented the guy who got beat up by Alvin Kamara. And he's representing these women as well. So if you're going to sue someone in the NFL, Tony Busby's for you.
Okay.
So we wait to see what happens. Jags put out their statement. We're aware. We know how serious this is. Blah, blah, blah. PR nonsense. But that happened.
I want Busby to drive to this court case in his Sherman tank, which I believe he has given up. But when Tony Busby had a World War II era Sherman tank parked on River Oaks, by Lamar High School, within view of it, like cannon or turret of the tank pointed toward Lamar.
Oh, I didn't know this.
It was one of the all-time sights. I drove by it because I'd heard about it, and I actually drove around again to say like that I did actually see it. The
George House Award. It's an award handed out by Pro Football Writers of America. It's given to an NFL player, coach, or staff member who overcomes the most adversity to succeed. John Metchie III was just named the winner of that. So congratulations, John, being recognized for your battles that you went through this last year.
Good for him.
Bronny James, he had 10 workout invites. He's only taken two. He's going to the Suns and the Lakers, and that's it.
Okay.
So apparently he thinks that's where he's going to go play and where his dad's going to play. Or he's like, if I can't play with my dad, I'm going to play with KD.
Yeah, probably.
I guess is the mindset here. It's Arcady and LeBron in cahoots.
I don't know. I'm so tired of Bronny.
I think the Suns are just like, yeah, we'll draft him. Sure.
Because he's the son of LeBron. Yeah.
And they're mad Ishbia. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
All right. To save us from Dallas winning a lot of things, we need your help. We need your people. The Celtics.
They swept the Pacers in a series that was a lot closer than you'd think last night. Another close game down to the wire. Jaylen Brown has been playing out of his mind. And
he's so good.
Honestly, like the Dallas, with their 3-0 series lead on the Wolves, Friday night when Luka Doncic got Rudy Gobert switched on to him defensively, I mean, That was a crime.
Yeah.
That was a Euro on Euro crime. And I don't know, Joe, if you were paying attention to one of the last episodes, potentially, of Inside the NBA for 2024. Although, I guess, yeah, next year there'll be, of course, episodes back on.
I was going to say, it's one of the last episodes for this year.
This is one of the last Western Conference episodes.
It's the last Western Conference, because they alternate every year. It's the last Western Conference Finals ever on TNT.
Next year
will be the last Eastern Conference Finals.
So if you watched in the postgame, there were a lot of really interesting moments, specifically in the postgame presser. Luka was asked if he told Gobert, "You can't effing guard me, bye, bitch." And here is his response when being asked that by a reporter.
So he can't effing guard you, huh?
Sorry?
He can't effing guard you?
Who said that?
You said that.
No, I didn't say that. I was speaking Slovenian.
He very clearly said that, and he very clearly said, go home, bitch, to Rudy Gobert after making that shot. And Inside the NBA, Joe, became a roast Rudy Gobert session.
Yes.
There was a moment where I believe Kenny Smith asked if he believes Doncic that there's any defender in the league who can guard him, and it just turned into everybody roasting Rudy Gobert.
I think that depends who's guarding me.
You have the defensive player of the year on you.
Yeah. I mean, he's long, you know. He can't move. I can't move fast, but I can move faster than him. Like I said, just get to my spot, man.
Does everyone hate Rudy Gobert?
Yes.
And it got to a point on this episode where Draymond eventually started hearing Draymond Green sucks chants from Timberwolves fans on Friday. And this moment really jumped out on Inside the NBA. I wasn't even watching it at this moment. I was walking to the bathroom. I heard this and I like poked my head back around the corner.
And then we wanted that. Yeah.
Rudy sucks. Not me. What I do?
Again?
I didn't do anything. What?
I love Draymond.
Do you? Because do we want to go one more in the rabbit hole with Draymond, Sean? Yes. Draymond Green was also on a podcast that I guess went public on Thursday or Friday. And in that podcast, he talked about how the NBA is not set up for wealthy players.
The fines to me don't make sense. You know, when you talk about as hard as we work to accumulate wealth, coming from situations that most people never make it out, and then you get fined the way we get fined, it's actually not set up for us to be wealthy after we're done playing. This job is not set up the way we're taxed.
Oh, California?
The way we're taxed, the way we're fined, and you know, you hear about all these programs like this program, this program, that is to cover everybody. This program is to teach this guy this. But if I do something wrong, I lose $100,000. Man, it took my mom 4 years when I was growing up to make $100,000. And I lose that in the night because, what? The referee got mad at me, and he didn't like what I said to him. So I lose $5,000 like that, like on a tech.
Yeah, okay. Is it 100 grand or is it 5 grand?
It's 100 grand.
It's 100. He's gotten fined 100 grand for because he's a multiple offender. But if you do get a tech, it's like 5 grand.
Yeah, I think I mean, like maybe don't punch people in the face or kick them in the nuts or like, I don't know.
That's the part that's funny is it's like, oh, if I make the referee mad, wait, what are you talking about, Draymond? And also, how much has that truly hurt Draymond Green? The whining about the referees and getting fined for technicals and getting suspended. The man has earned, what, $100 million in his career?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can pull
that
out.
At least.
I'm assuming it's north of $100 million, and he's saying that I'm guessing $100 grand in total he's been fined over the course of his career or something like that.
No, he's gotten a couple where it's like $100 grand.
Guys, he's made $155 million in his career.
Okay.
This is like if I fined Sean a dollar.
It actually might be less than that. It might be like fining me like 10 cents.
Like, what are you complaining about?
And also, it's only really a problem if you're getting fined and suspended all the freaking time. That's when it's a real problem.
Like, hey, just, dude, stop getting kicked out of games. Let's start there, Draymond. All right, that's in case you missed it. When we get back, Bill Walton passed away this weekend. And a lineup change is on the way for the Astros. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. We're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Joe Espada just said in an interview that Alex Bregman will start batting fifth again, or at least will tonight. So when things were going really well for the Astros, Alex Bregman was batting fifth, and then they changed it. And then things started going not as well for Jeremy Pena and Alex Bregman in the top four. So they're going to go back to Alex Bregman batting fifth.
I don't get why they went away from it.
I don't either.
I don't get why it's only fifth. I don't get why fifth is like some basement Alex Bregman to drop.
Another good point, Sean.
Why is Jake Meyers not batting fifth? He drives in lots of runs. No, the bottom of your order with Jake Meyers in it is really what's giving you most of your offense right now. So I guess in theory, that's not what you want to change. But I agree. Why is he only dropping one spot? He ain't going to be back next year. Who cares about his feelings?
Man. I mean, Blair Henley knows that you don't care about Blair Henley's feelings, even though he just
gave him his
won
props.
Award. So
probably the only radio show in town that gave him his props.
Exactly. Today. Which puts me and you above the rest. Okay?
Fair and balanced.
They also claimed something named a Caleb Ort from the Orioles and optioned him to AAA Sugar Land.
Also mean. Someone called Kalem Ort.
He said something. He dehumanized him.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Honestly, I don't like how Joe talks about minor league pitchers.
I don't either.
Especially on a day where he was helping initiate and train a whole bunch of interns. I'm scared of how he talks about the interns.
He's talking
about professional athletes like this.
Yeah. Well, speaking of minor leaguers,
a lot of interns in here.
Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti pitching. They do. I had to tell them to be quiet.
Good.
I'm glad you did, because I was about to tell him to shut that.
Paul walked in, and I'm like, all right.
I was about to say some mean things.
They were like waiting for like one more person to finish to do the rest of their training, and I was like, hey guys.
One of them was talking about how one of them had a hot Jalen Green take, and I was like, oh, so you're one of these people, and I really wanted to turn around and direct all of my fire.
Okay, you didn't drop it. You didn't say you're one of these people to this 19-year-old.
I stopped it before it happened.
Okay,
playing defense, not offense. rest in peace to Bill Walton. Passed away at 71.
Man,
apparently had cancer,
which I was unaware of. But if you had been watching Pac-12 After Dark, which I personally do not, but some people had said that he was not there.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize it either this year. I
was pretty stunned by this. I mean, that 30 for 30 about him,
it's very good,
came out fairly recently, and yeah, I had no idea that he was going through any of this. It's one of those people where, yeah, he's been through a million different things, especially surgeries. My God.
Yeah.
I mean, his body is about as metallic probably as it gets. But not something that I would have expected. And I know for me, my Bill Walton experience has largely been with Bill Walton as a broadcaster. And as somebody who rambles and does not exactly have the best focus when talking about things, I have always enjoyed that Bill Walton was unapologetically himself, even if it was perhaps distracting at times to some.
I was watching some of the highlights when he did the baseball game with Jason Panetti a couple years ago. That was very funny. I got to interview Bill Walton one time.
You did?
Yeah, my first stint at Gow, I did a show on the network. It was called In the Post. Elvin Hayes was my co-host.
Okay.
And he would bring on all these Hall of Famers. It was awesome.
That's sick.
Our first interview was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and then we had Bill Walton the next week. and it was supposed to be a 15-minute interview.
Now you're stuck with me.
And I said hello to Bill Walton. Nice to meet you. And then he talked for 17 minutes, I think it was, talking about how Elvin used to go play basketball with them when Bill was in high school. I think it was like. And the interview ended up being an hour long. I think we asked four questions, and he just kept going and going and going. My favorite, though, is definitely when he ate the birthday candle, the cupcake and the candle. And they told Dave Pasch, like, dared him to eat it with it lit, and he did it.
There is a thread on awfulannouncing.com, and it just is a compilation of some of the greatest hits of Bill Walton. That one actually made
me
laugh.
So funny. It's so funny.
He ate a lit candle on a cupcake. Like, he ate the cupcake with the lit candle in it. I think he might have eaten the candle.
No, he takes the candle out of his mouth.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. You don't want to eat wax.
Yeah, fire, yes. Wax,
This compilation, I mean, there's one in 2013 where a bunch of mascots are getting out of a limousine and he makes a Ray Lewis joke, like, out of nowhere.
Oh, that's pretty good. I don't think I saw that. I'm going to have to go watch that.
There's one where he compared Boris Diaw to Beethoven and the Age of the Romantics.
He compared Tyreek Evans to Einstein and Da Vinci and Steve Jobs while doing a 360 layup.
Here's a couple other ones. Here is part of my take. Had Bill Walton on years ago. They never released they used to not do video for their podcast, but they would record them, I guess, with video, and they released some snippets from that yesterday. Here is Bill Walton on part of my take.
When you go off in the middle of the broadcast, do you ever get lost in your own mind and you like almost forget where you are?
I get lost all the time, and it's
unbelievable to listen to. Like, people love to listen to it. It's late night on the East Coast.
It's fun to get lost, and it's important to get lost, but getting lost, that implies that I know where I am to begin with. And and that's a giant leap of faith right there.
Oh, it's good to get lost, Paul. Do you get lost?
What do you think?
I don't think anyone gets lost like Bill Walton gets
lost. I need a GPS at all times when I'm driving from point A to point B, and I'll still get lost from time to time.
Also, Sam, here's also Bill Walton maybe getting lost when he compares Kansas to a volcano, a waterfall, and a breaching whale.
The men have arrived. This Kansas team, oh my gosh, they are like a volcano. They are like a waterfall that just goes right over everything. They are like a breaching whale that just jumps across your screen at indiscriminate times. What's your name again?
Let's get to the player that we want to talk about here.
The waterfalls that just keep coming down. They have no chance against Udoka, one of my favorite players in all the land.
Is that Ime Udoka he's talking about there?
No.
Oh, that would have been something else. I mean, he's been calling college basketball to the point where, did Ime Udoka play?
I don't know, actually.
You know what? I was thinking about Joe Mazzulla. I know Mazzulla played at West Virginia for a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, my God, the guy just went on tangents. And
yeah.
He went chasing waterfalls there. And if you've watched the other guys, you don't go chasing waterfalls.
And one more here from Bill, another favorite that Paul found. Asked about if he auditioned to play Chewbacca.
Is it true, because we were showing the George Lucas building there, is it true that you were in the mix to play Chewbacca?
No.
I heard that.
Chewbacca is modeled after me.
I'm being serious. I heard that you were in the running for that you were being considered to play that role. I'm being serious.
You're always serious. That's one of your problems, is that you don't have fun with your life.
But you're not answering the question.
No, George Lucas is as cool as they get. And I remember the night that George and Kareem and Bill Russell and me, we were all up in San Francisco at a big fundraiser for the Martin Luther King Memorial. Beautiful play by Kajani Wright.
So since you're not answering the question, I'm just going to assume it's true.
What was the question?
I'm just going to assume it's true because there's...
I auditioned for Chewbacca and they said, no, but we're going to model the character after you.
You were in Ghostbusters and people didn't know that. So again, I think there's a great chance that this is a true story. They're going to look at this.
Chewbacca.
I can't imagine what social media was like that night. If Twitter was like a big deal then. People were probably so upset. All the nerds and their pitchforks coming after Bill Walton because they called him Chewbacca.
Maybe. I don't know if they would have been mad about that, but I think more people would have been focused on the fact that if that was actually a possibility, and also just the side note that he was in Ghostbusters, which I had no idea about. Pac-12 After Dark is for stoners. Let's be honest.
I do find it... I don't know if ironic's the right word. It's like someone dies from a broken heart. That the day the Pac-12 dies and officially is no more as the college baseball playoffs wrapped up and the Pac-12 now ceased to exist, Bill Walton passes away. The Conference of Champions. Because that was always this big thing. Like, no matter how bad the Pac-12 was at basketball, he would just talk about how great of a conference it was all the time. And then, like, as soon as the conference is gone, and then he passes away the next day.
Like, literally, they sign off on Pac-12 Network.
And then he's gone.
Yeah.
Bill Walton claims he was a ghost in a Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay. Must have been a big ghost.
Was he Slimer? Probably wasn't Slimer, huh?
Just like, maybe it was his voice.
I feel like he would claim Slimer just as a as a gag.
Because that's the only one people know.
Yeah, what other ghosts are?
To me, it's the only one that's named.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, there's him, and then there's the marshmallow guy,
Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah, they make a lot of cameos in the two new ones. There's lots of mini marshmallows.
I can't believe you watched both the new ones.
They're pretty good, actually. I was pleasantly surprised.
Huh?
With Paul Rudd, and then one of the main kids from Stranger Things is in it. I was actually pleasantly surprised.
There's two new ones?
There's three. There's the female one. Haven't seen that one. Sorry.
Sexist.
Wow. As soon as I started that sentence, I knew
just
that was
throw
going.
Paul Rudd in there. You could have lied and said that you saw it.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't see the Ocean's 8 either. So I was just throw it all out there. But I saw the two newest ones, the one that just came out recently. They were not bad. I see the franchises back a little bit. But rest in peace to Bill Walton. Mm.
Right. So he's just an uncredited background extra in Ghostbusters. I see the still.
Okay, so
does that mean he's in it?
No, or they're just filming New York, and he was just in New York.
Yeah, just
in
like
the back.
8 feet tall,
7
with
foot
red
tall,
hair. Yeah.
Redhead.
Yeah. All right. We mentioned this earlier, but the Astros pitching woes continue. We are awaiting updates on Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy. We'll dive into that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.